Welcome, everybody. This is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary.
Welcome back, Em.
Hey, Gav. Hello.
How are you today?
Very, very well. Thank you. And you?
I'm happy to hear it. Yeah, me too. I'm absolutely fabulous.
Good.
So we've got a really interesting topic today, Em. Mm. And thankfully, we've got somebody to help us with it.
Yes, that's right.
So we're really excited today because later we will hear from our special guest, who is Brittany R. Collins, who will speak on the topic of loss and grief, and that's coming later.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic and not one I've really considered before. This was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting topic to talk about our own thoughts and how we approach grief and loss in the classroom, and also just a kind of summary of things that have happened over the last few years, which I think have affected everybody.
Yeah. So just a warning, everyone, we're going to be talking about bereavement, grief and loss today.
And we're not experts. So if you want to talk to anybody, we do encourage you to seek help from trained mental health professionals to support you in this work.
When it comes to loss, Gav, obviously everyone's going to experience it. It's inevitable. It's part of life. But we are quite maybe reluctant, scared, awkward about talking about it. Do you agree? I mean, I know I am.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It's not something that comes up very often, to be honest.
No, it doesn't. But I don't know why, because it is such a big part of what we go through. So we shouldn't be scared about it. We should definitely deal with it, talk about it, share our feelings about it.
I agree, definitely. And for some people, it must be a big part of their life and something that they have to deal with every day.
Of course, and others may just experience it periodically, go through it.
And it may return at some point. So there could be awkward moments in lessons, for example, Em, where you might ask the student, so tell me, what does your brother do, or your sister, or your parents? And then the student may say to you, my brother died a few years ago, or I recently lost my parents or something.
Yeah, I'm never sure how to react. Usually I just mumble, sorry, or, you know, just something strange like that. But
and then change the topic?
Yeah, I do quickly change the topic because I don't know what to follow with. So that's something I think I need to think about and deal with because it does come up, and it has come up with a lot of my classes. And if I can just give you a strange example, last week, one of my students told me that his mum had died. And I did what I said. I just sort of mumbled, sorry, I'm really sorry to hear that. That's sad. And carried on with the lesson kind of thing.
Changing the topic, or were you then?
Yeah, I just sort of moved on. I said, oh, well, I'm very sorry about that. And we just carried on with the lesson as I'd planned it. But then literally the next lesson I had, one of my students told me that her dog had died that weekend. And my reaction to that was completely different. We had this 10-minute conversation about the dog and how amazing the dog was, how loving, how it had a great life, healthy life. And I just wondered, like, what's going on there? You know, I can talk about a dog and express, and this student was really obviously upset, but enjoying talking about the dog and what contribution it had with her and how much she loved it. But I don't do that when students tell me that their family, friends have died. And I don't know why that is, because I'm sure we want to talk about it sometimes.
Is that because of your own personal experiences, do you think?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe because I feel I wouldn't want to show emotion to other people. So I'm not asking more questions, maybe out of politeness.
When talking about loss of people.
Yeah.
But maybe you've had a loss of pets.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know why. It's just more manageable when it's a pet. It's something that we do talk about. I mean, I do with people I know, but I don't when it's people. And I don't know why that is. So, yeah, I think that's worth thinking about. You know, is it that awkward feeling that you don't want to put that person in a difficult situation? You don't want them to have to express emotion in a lesson situation. I just expect people come to the lessons and they want to learn. They don't want to cry or, you know, break down in front of other people.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about how they feel about me. I'm talking about a one-to-one, but also in a group. Would that be appropriate to probe into that person's emotions?
That would be very different between a one-to-one where they would like to confide in you and tell you something personal, but in a group, that could be quite embarrassing.
Exactly. So I usually do quickly move on if it's a group. If it's, you know, anything like loss of a family member or a friend or a pet or even divorce, separation, all of these sort of things that come under the bracket of loss, I wouldn't talk about because I think that that's personal and emotional and I wouldn't want that to come up. But we should talk about it. It's natural, it's normal, it happens.
Going back to your moment where the student didn't want to talk about loss or you assumed the student didn't, was there a pause where you gave the student just a fraction of a second to either discuss the topic with you or to move on as you decided?
Yeah, I think there was a pause, but more of a respectful pause rather than, okay, let's talk about something else very quickly. I mean, that's necessary, but the student didn't then carry on talking.
So there was a moment where they had a choice if they did want to say, well, Em, I wouldn't mind talking to you about this.
I guess, but I don't know. I think from my experience with my students, they would wait for me, for my cue to ask questions. And I never know whether to do that, if they would be welcome, you know, whether they would welcome more questions. That's always a tricky one.
So just a brief showing sympathy and maybe leaving a little gap, just a tiny opening for the student to give you some information if they want to, or simply, as you said, show some sympathy and then move on.
Yeah.
I've had students come to me and say, oh, something terrible's happened, and like the examples you gave, it could be a loss or a divorce or something. And I think typically they don't want to discuss this with me. They see the lessons as an opportunity to chat about something completely different. They've just been able to forget about their worries for a little while they're in the lesson.
Yeah, it's a great distraction, I think. But on the other side, I think it's also quite therapeutic for them to express themselves, especially in a different language, because they've probably had conversations in their own language about what they're going through, but not in another language. So that must do something, I think, quite significant to the, you know, the feeling you have when you're expressing yourself and you're having to think very carefully about the words you're using and maybe using words you wouldn't usually use. So in a way, it could probably help them to actually deal with the feelings they're having as well.
And your teacher is not perhaps a family member. They're not really a friend. So they're somebody outside your social group and somebody perhaps you can confide in that you don't feel they might have some bias or you're worried about upsetting them.
So exactly.
Perhaps teachers are good people to talk to.
I think so. I think it is refreshing for students to have that, and it's good for us to be open to it. I think that's the important thing. If they, like you said, wait, see if they want to talk about that more and then go with it or not. But then it's also whether or not you teach them while they're telling you these things. It's awful if you're correcting their grammar as they're telling you some, you know, sad story. So I wouldn't, in that situation, be a teacher.
Well, teachers are many different things. They're also mentors. They're perhaps an ear.
Yeah.
At times.
Yeah, at times. I think that's what I struggle with. Like, how much time do you give for this thing? Because you're not a therapist, really. You're
exactly.
there to
We're
teach.
Definitely not trained to give advice or to direct anybody other than to speak to a professional.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to be mindful of your role and also your power, because a lot of people do see their teachers as somebody who is wise and informed and knowledgeable. So your words can actually be quite powerful in that way.
Yeah, that's interesting what you said about not correcting the student's grammar or vocabulary, because I have experienced that where somebody told me their friend or their relative dead rather than died, and I'm obviously not going to correct these words because that would seem very insensitive.
Yeah.
Say, oh, hold on, the word's wrong and the grammar's wrong here.
Yeah, exactly. But then it is very useful to know the phrases, you know, like we use passed away because we don't want to say dead because it's such a strong evocative word.
Mm.
And I don't know when you would feed that in, maybe just repeating, you know, I'm very sorry that your friend has passed away may work just as a cue. But yeah, I don't know whether we should be thinking.
I'd feel really uncomfortable just even feeding language into that and saying, well, that's very interesting what you told me. Now, here are some other ways to express it.
Yeah.
For example, don't use kick the bucket because it seems very insensitive.
That's right. You have to really tread carefully with what you say. That's why I do often just say nothing, because I don't know what to say.
So there are many times where we just don't know how to respond. And as you said, let's just turn back to the lesson plan and carry on where we were. And if the student seems to be coping with that, then maybe focus on the lesson rather than any other external factors.
I think you have to judge it and see, because everybody's different. So you have to judge as a teacher or a person what that other person needs. My first experience of somebody telling me about loss was when I was teaching in China, and I had a group of 25 kids, and I'd given them a project to draw a picture of what their parents did, their jobs. You know, we were doing jobs that week.
Was that idea yours, or was that
it was in the curriculum? So it was about jobs, and so the book had said, draw a picture of your parents and what their jobs are. And then I was walking around looking at what they were all drawing, and then I was aware of one boy just sobbing basically in the corner. And I said, you know, what's up? You okay? And he said, oh, my dad was a policeman and he died doing the job. And he was drawing that police officer uniform. And yeah, I just sort of sat with him for a minute and that was it. I just said, okay, well, I like your picture and, you know, it's really amazing what you've told me. And that was a memorable moment for me because I hadn't dealt with that up until then. So I had to reflect on that, you know, was that the right thing to do? But I think it was in that situation, because he was in a big group, and then on a one-to-one level, like we've said, you've got that intimacy. So then I've had conversations maybe a little bit more involved. Gav, have you ever been told about a student's loss before a lesson by a different person, so that you knew that that person had lost someone or that had experienced something of loss, but you weren't face to face with that student at the time? Because that's happened to me quite a few times.
I don't think so, but I know what you mean, where another student tells you and in order to prepare you for that situation.
Exactly, because quite often that student who's lost someone will not be in that lesson, but their colleague or their friend will have found out and said, oh, by the way, this has happened. And then you're faced with that decision of what do you do next time you see that student.
So you don't start the lesson with, oh, we missed you last week, where were you?
Yeah.
And they might have to say, I was at a funeral or something. Yeah.
But then do you say, oh, I heard you lost your father and I'm sorry about that? Again, you know, start off a sort of emotional response that maybe your student is not prepared for. What do you do in that situation?
Again, I think I would be a bit nervous to bring up that topic, and I probably would avoid it.
I do. Every time it's happened, I've been told and I just haven't mentioned it, unless the student has mentioned it themselves and then we've expressed sympathy. But yeah, again, it's a strange dynamic, because we're all human, we all feel pain and, you know, sadness, and it's not a bad thing to feel negative emotions and to feel pain and to feel upset. And I don't know why we don't embrace it more and allow those feelings into our classrooms, because it's not all about, you know, fun and giggles, is it?
I agree. Again, you need to know that student who has experienced a loss is prepared to talk about it or wants to talk about it, can see the benefit in that.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to have the whole class discussing this topic and the student who has experience the loss to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And then everybody, you know, upset and in a very low mood. I suppose that's why we don't go there.
I think something else that we can talk about, which is connected with today's topic, Em, is there were three big things that happened over the last few years. And in fact, they all happened in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name them?
Of course, the pandemic.
Okay.
Three big things. Well, there were the forest fires in Australia. And I also remember George Floyd was killed.
So there were three huge incidents, huge events that I think possibly reshaped our environment.
Yeah.
Physically and societally.
Yeah, definitely. They did cause huge grief and outbursts as well, like actual changes.
Mm-hmm. As you said, happening around the COVID time. So perhaps people were at home a lot more. They were reflecting more on their lives and the lives of other people around them and the world that we live in. And I think a lot of people experienced loss.
Yeah.
And they grieved over that. And I think people took some time just to reflect on their impact on the world that we live in, and maybe to think about how to improve the way that they live in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It certainly was true for me. I spent a lot of time thinking about and learning about, you know, reading about Black Lives Matter movement, thinking about the impact that I have and how I can be more open-minded and more inclusive. So it was a very important time for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially with, you know, working from home or being at home, you do become very introspective and you start reflecting on your own life and what you're doing. So I agree. I think there was a lot happening in that year and that wasn't long ago. So we're still kind of reeling from it, aren't we?
Mm.
The aftermath of how it impacted our lives.
Yeah, definitely. So I think I try to carry these three topics around with me, and I hope that we can try to reflect our opinions in the pod and support what we hope are causes and working to achieve the goals that we're setting for ourselves.
Yeah.
With those three themes in mind, Em, I've got three questions for you.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I am.
Right.
So how did you feel when you heard that the COVID-19 virus was approaching? And if you don't feel comfortable answering this, you don't have to.
No, I'm okay. I felt scared and ignorant because I didn't know anything about it. And so, yeah, I felt it was big. I felt this kind of weight of something coming. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew it was going to be bad.
It was a very scary time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so there was that feeling of apprehension as well.
Mm-hmm. What was your response to the BLM movement?
Curiosity and maybe a bit of shame because I didn't know anything and hadn't thought about a lot of it before. So then, yeah, after George Floyd died, I definitely read a lot, listened to a lot, learned a lot.
And talked to people.
Yeah. It was a bit difficult at the time because we had the lockdowns and everything. But yeah, just educated myself.
Thank you. I've got one more question. Is that all right?
Yeah.
How can you reduce your negative impact on the environment, Em?
Connected to the forest fires, you mean? Yeah, I think this was also in my mind a lot of at the beginning of 2020. Just, again, the feeling of something big happening out of my control. And that is, I think, another big thing about loss is that feeling of not being in control. And we hate that. I think we all hate that feeling. I like to be in control. So I think that was, for me, a very big loss in my life, the lack of control of, you know, those things. So, yeah, I think it was a life-changing year, 2020. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So how can you reduce your negative impact?
Okay, sorry, I didn't answer your question. Try and buy locally when possible, but also I look at the packaging and I try not to buy something that's covered in three layers of plastic. If I can get something in a cardboard box, then I go for that. Small things, but, you know, it all helps.
Cool. So, for example, flying less.
Yeah.
Eating less meat.
Yep.
Driving less.
Exactly. All of those.
I like that, eating local produce. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Carbon footprint and all that.
Thank you for answering my questions, Em. I realise that they're quite difficult questions to answer because they do evoke quite strong emotions. So maybe I should have prepared you a little bit more, but obviously because I know you very well and I hope you trust me and I wouldn't put you in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah, it's interesting actually how I feel now because I do trust you and it is a safe space, but I did feel quite vulnerable, quite exposed. And yeah, that's nice just to reflect on. So a teacher asking a student the same kind of questions, those direct questions about emotions and how you feel, it does create the same feeling, I think, in students of, I'm not expecting this question, I'm not ready for this question. And those emotions are just immediately on the surface, which is how I felt. It was reliving it at that moment. So it's just something really interesting to think about how it makes you feel.
So be careful. Direct questions are quite difficult.
And always think of the other person's point of view, I think, is really good. Just think, how would I feel in that situation? And would I be comfortable answering that question?
I agree. It's really important to reflect on those points. Now I would like to introduce today's guest, who is Brittany R. Collins, the author of Grief Responsive Teaching, an amazing book which I have really, really enjoyed reading and is absolutely full, jam-packed of advice and strategies for responding to students as they might be experiencing physical as well as psychological grief from loss. She discusses practical steps to consider when confronting a grieving student, as well as encouraging educators to see grief as fluid and affecting people differently. And on top of the checklists that she provides, which allow educators to make sure they've covered all the bases, also has some practical activities that students can do in their lessons. For example, there are a couple of activities such as milestone memories and also dialogue journals, letters to a listener, where Brittany describes letters to a listener is an interactive writing activity between students and teachers that facilitates communication because students who are experiencing difficult emotions may find it easier to write or draw their thoughts and feelings than speak about them.
That's a really good point, isn't it? I'm just assuming everybody's going to be doing it verbally, but of course, yeah, writing it down really helps.
And we're in really privileged positions because we as educators, and especially in English, in languages, we can provide the means for our students to express themselves. So introducing Brittany, who is an educator and formerly bereaved student, not a psychologist or trained mental health specialist.
Hello, everyone, and thanks so much to Gavin M. for having me on this edition of How to English Pod. My name is Brittany Collins. I'm the author of Learning from Loss, A Trauma-Informed Approach to Supporting Grieving Students, a new book recently published with Heinemann Publishing. I'm also the founder of Grief Responsive Teaching, a professional learning community and resource hub dedicated to supporting students and teachers' well-being in times of loss. So today I have the privilege of speaking with you about grief responsive teaching as a methodology, as well as how English and writing teachers are especially positioned to create really impactful grief responsive classrooms. First, I thought we could begin with some background info. So we know that prior to the pandemic, 7 out of 10 teachers had a student in their classroom who was actively grieving. As of October 2021, over 1.5 million children worldwide had lost a parent or guardian to COVID-19. Over 140,000 of those children were in the United States alone, and BIPOC youth are facing much higher rates of bereavement due to systemic health inequities that, of course, the pandemic is only underscoring. And in the context of the Omicron variant, these numbers have continued to ascend this winter. They are growing astronomical if we consider the ways in which grief transcends death as well. So students may experience grief responses in their brains, in their bodies, in response to what is called living losses, meaning a divorce or familial separation, a move, a change in schooling, a shift in socioeconomic standing, experiences in foster care, generational grief and trauma, which tie heavily into issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and many other types of loss. So of course, teachers too are grappling with grief in similar ways, whether connected to the death of a loved one or these other forms of losses, especially amid the pandemic. So we understand that loss is an inevitable presence in the learning environment and is manifesting in many forms. But grief also has a direct impact on learning. So it's not only in the classroom, but it's impacting learning for all students. The neurologist Lisa Shulman writes in her book, Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Grief, Loss, and Our Brains, that grief involves a fight or flight response as well as a depressive response. And it impacts almost every part of the brain. So when our body is flooded with stress hormones, our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that controls higher order functioning like emotional regulation or impulse control, forethought, planning, dreaming, and of course, learning, takes a back seat. So this means that not only do students and teachers have a harder time concentrating or remembering information, but they may also exhibit a number of behavioral changes in the classroom in response to these physiological and neurological changes. In most cases, these behavioral changes are the body's creative way of meeting an unmet need in the face of loss. So they're actually often very ingenious adaptations. For example, a student may exhibit more anger than usual, more outbursts, and this could be a coping mechanism that in the context for which it's developed, a loss context, helps them, say, defend a family member in an unsafe situation. Or another student may exhibit connection-seeking behaviors. And again, in a loss context, that behavior might help that student meet their need for love and attention in a chaotic grief context where maybe they're dealing with a guardian who's also struggling in the face of grief, and this is a way to reinforce that kind of bond. So teachers are in a unique position to identify these grief behaviors in the classroom. You may not know a student's specific story. You may not even know that they're actively grieving, but recognizing that behavioral changes and challenges are often an adaptation. And then to view them through an asset-based lens, meaning considering, again, behaviors as adaptations rather than something to punish or to reprimand. And this connects heavily to restorative justice if we think about the ways in which bias has been proven to play a role in school discipline and the interpretation of student behavior. And then to respond mindfully to the presence and impact of loss by attending to things like the classroom environment, to caring relationships, and to curricula through a grief responsive lens. Grief responsive teaching, as a definition, is a pedagogical and interpersonal approach to teaching and learning that integrates science and stories of grief into actionable classroom practices that support students and teachers' well-being in times of loss. So we never want to lose sight of that both adults and young people are impacted by loss. Because grief impacts the brain, body, and behavior, and by extension, teaching and learning in the ways we just discussed, grief-responsive teaching seeks to support and empower the whole person, so socially, emotionally, culturally, and academically. If we think about the classroom environment, things like routine, predictability, and agency are really important in a grief context because loss threatens each of those things. If we think about ways to scaffold the learning environment, like starting and ending class the same way each day, or integrating mindfulness or free writing to support regulation, or maybe checking in with students regularly, offering choice activities, whether that's through project-based learning or reading assignments. All of these practices seek to restore those entities, that sense of agency and control and choice that are threatened in a lost context. Next, if we think about caring relationships, which are scientifically proven to be our most powerful buffer against adversity, against trauma, how can we foster strong teaching and mentoring relationships with young people, even outside of a grief context, so that they know they're supported? This may or may not mean direct discussions about loss, so it's important to take students' cues always regarding self-disclosure and whether and with whom they feel comfortable talking about their experiences. So we never want to put them on the spot to do so. But what are other small ways, like lending a book or attending a sporting event or connecting a student with a colleague, that show young people we are here for them, that we care about them? And finally, curricula. So English teachers are in a very unique position to do grief responsive work, because reading and writing can be such healing acts in a grief context. Expressive writing, for example, is a style of free writing that uses emotion words and is proven by psychologist James Pennebaker and others to not only aid in the loss process, but improve liver, immune function, and psychological well-being for those who engage in it. Poems and narratives that explore loss implicitly or explicitly can also serve as those mirrors and windows for grieving students, so long as students are invited to participate on what I refer to as a challenge by choice basis, meaning they have the option always to choose alternative texts if they're not ready to explore a certain text or certain theme. And then writing assignments that support identity development and the sharing of lived experience can also not only empower metacognition in young writers, but also build empathy and connection and counteract the isolation that is so characteristic of grief and of loss. When students are able to share pieces of themselves with others, whether peers or teachers, in safe and supported ways in the classroom. So all of these practices are uniquely positioned to take place in an English or literature or writing classroom. And so long, again, as students' comfort levels are placed at the center of the work, and these practices at the same time benefit teachers' well-being, teachers who may be experiencing loss, meaning we begin, when we think intentionally about grief responsive practices, to build wraparound systems for healing-centered schools in the face of grief. For more information about grief responsive teaching, including lesson plans, activities, curricular frameworks, and of course the stories of other teachers working to foster grief responsive environments, I invite you to check out my book, Learning from Loss, at Heinemann.com, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon, and to visit my website, www.griefresponsiveteaching.com, for additional resources. Thanks so much for your time today, and take care.
I found the part about how students behave after experiencing loss very interesting. The way that it can come out in outbursts or anger or even just sort of very erratic emotional behavior. That's really interesting, I think, because you don't always know why people are acting a certain way in your lessons, and this may be why.
Students respond very differently as well. It could be that they get angry, or that they disconnect, or maybe they get very needy.
Yeah, all of that. And what Brittany said about establishing these routines, which is quite a comforting thing, I think. Like you said before as well, that the students know that this is a space they can go into, talk about it if they want or not, but that will be sort of a set thing in their life that they can rely on being there. The really important thing about support, it's not always just from us as teachers. The support can come from classmates, and it doesn't have to even involve the teacher, which is a really good thing as well, to get students sharing their experiences. I mean, it always helps, doesn't it, if you've gone through something, to know that other people have gone through it as well.
Yeah, they can give you some really good advice.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about teachers, did we? Of course, we go through loss and experience the same things as our students. It's hard to teach when you're going through grief.
It's also the teachers, the caregivers. Everybody needs to have that support around them in order to provide care and help that the students might need. So remember, if you're an educator or if you're supporting people, you also need to have that support. Make sure you get a copy of Brittany R. Collins' book, Learning from Loss, A Trauma-Informed Approach to Supporting Grieving Students, published by Heinemann. And if you're interested, maybe pop back to our catalogue and check out the episode. It's season 2, episode 8, and it's called Self-Care, and it's all about well-being. So please check that out. We might be able to give you a little bit of advice on how to look after yourself.
Yeah, because we're all going through it, not just students, teachers too.
And we've come to the final part of the show. Do you remember what this feature's called?
Teacher, teach me.
Should we try again?
Yep.
1, 2, 3. Teacher, teach me. That's it. Where we get a teacher or learner to share a vocabulary or grammar point with us. So we're lucky today to have Cassandra. And you can find Cassandra on Instagram at cassandraormatia.elt. Where she has some fantastic vocabulary and grammar tips that you can check out and improve your knowledge.
And everything today will be in the show notes, Gav, won't it?
Yes, it will. So let's listen to Cassandra and Em. I'll see you next time.
Okay, Gav. See ya.
Hi, everyone. Here is Cassandra, an English teacher from Brazil. Today I want to teach you an idiom. I will give an example and you try to notice what is the idiom in this example. Her doctor said that her illness was brought on by stress and recommended that she stop burning the candle at both ends. So, as you may have noticed, the idiom is burn the candle at both ends, which means to become very tired by trying to do too many things and going to bed late and getting up early. Unfortunately, this is something that most of us have been doing for a while, especially with this pandemic thing. We needed to adjust our routines, and normally we are working more than it's necessary and we are not resting enough. So in this situation, when we want to convey a message, in this context, we can use this idiom. I'll give you another example. I've been burning the candle at both ends, which is totally unhealthy. I should definitely change it in my life. So, I hope you have enjoyed this mini lesson. And if you want to find me on Instagram, my page is cassandraormatia.elt. I will spell it cassandraormatia.elt. Thank you so much for the opportunity.